Valanciunas makes one of two. The Raptors come to Denver and start the road trip with a win.
They can't set up. We get our best player, our best guy with the ball, our closer, the league's leading scorer with the ball. In and out fadeaway, I'll take it every time.
DeRozan trying to free up Kyle in the corner. Temple on the switch, deflected. Here's Ross with the three. Terrence Ross delivers the three. T-Ross. They're saying it touched Cousins' hands. They're saying that the shot took 2.5, no basket. Game over. Raptors lose. Dwayne Casey is right now getting the explanation from Mike Callahan.
There's nothing to say to justify it, and especially for the refs to be so nonchalant about it. That's the thing about it that was really frustrating. That was just a bad call.
It was a clock malfunction. And, you know, I've been in coaching now 37 years, college and pros. You know, if it's indisputable, let's play five more. Again, I got to hear another explanation better than that.
We got next. This is Free Association with Donovan Bennett and J.D. Bunkus.
Ugh. The league won't apologize, so we will. Sorry for reminding everybody about that clip. That was terrible. This is Free Association. I'm JD Bunkus. He's Donovan Bennett. This podcast brought to you not by Over the Phone Line, which we did last week. We're sorry for that. That was pretty bush. But we're lazy. And you get this for free. So no more complaining. Donovan just spent a week in California. Interesting week for the Raptors. Headed by, I don't want to spend a ton of time on this, but we do. We will talk quickly about the clock malfunction in Sacramento. You got to catch up with Jose Calderon, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, I think I enjoyed my time in California more than the Raptors and Dwayne Casey. And by the way, the call against Terrence Ross at the end of the Clippers game or phantom call, foul on Redick was, in my estimation, worse than the call at the end of the Kings game.
Oh, that's hot. Well, I mean, coming in hot from California.
You jumped phantom all over call. A foul call on one of the best free throw shooters in the league when one of the worst free throw shooters in the league is the guy they actually would want to foul. That's DeAndre Jordan.
Nah, that game was over. So you went to California. Like I said, you got to catch up with Jose Calderon. You were there for a wedding. You didn't reply to any of my texts. I tried texting you a bunch of times.
The data is expensive.
Yeah, apparently. No emails, no nothing. It's cool. Meanwhile, you're posting on Instagram like every 15 minutes.
Well, that's Wi-Fi.
You're just down at Muscle Beach.
That's Wi-Fi. That's different.
Oh, okay. I tried you on email too. You taking a Warriors game?
I did, yeah.
What was that like?
I was at Oracle. It was awesome.
I've been to a Warriors game since I was like a little kid.
Well, I think they're a bit different now.
Yeah, I think so too.
The Run TMC days are...
I didn't even see those days. I saw like the when they were really crap, like a Donald Foyle days.
Shout out to Don Nelson. There's all this talk about, oh man, Oracle crowds, best in the league. But before that, it was Thunder crowds, best in the league. I want to set the record straight. From a 40, you know, from a full game basis, the crowds in Toronto were louder.
Who'd you see them play?
The Phoenix Suns.
That's a tough team to gauge it on, though. You got to see it when it's...
I think people are not buying the ticket for the opposition. They're buying
Raptors,
the ticket for the team with four all-stars.
But are Raptors fans that amazing when it's the Sixers are in town? Because, like, the Suns or the Nets...
Curry and Clay both went for 30 and Durant went for 29. I will say this. There are peaks on like a great sequence, great play when the Warriors fans, their height is louder. But you're looking baseline for the entire game. It's louder than the ACC.
This is good. One day we'll have to do fan power rankings. I would rank the Thunder a lot lower. I think they're a big pretender fan base. When your whole team was James Harden and Kevin Durant, Russell Westbrook, and Serge Ibaka, from the inception of your franchise. I don't think it's that hard to fill up an arena, especially when you have nothing else to do in your town, and you're kind of seeing that now. Okay, so you're coming in hot. You're hating on Warrior fans. You think Terrence Ross is
getting great fan base.
And really bad breaks.
They're a little surly, too. Like, a little bit more. They get after their own team a little bit more than I thought they would.
At
least where I was
sitting.
The Silicon Valley crowd on courtside might be a bit different.
Now you're hating on the rich people.
I thoroughly enjoyed my time in Oakland.
It seems pretty good. You had to go down for a friend of your wife's wedding?
Correct, yeah.
Spent a bunch of time going to basketball gyms and watching games?
Pretty much, yeah.
That's all right. That's not a bad way to spend a trip. I'll still know you.
Hi, DeMar DeRozan, Toronto Raptors, and you're listening to Free Association. You can't stand the heat. Just be cool, stop acting like a fool, cause I know it is the weather. I know the times is screwing up your mind, but we must stick together. No work for you, for miles around. This is Free Association on Sportsnet.ca and Sportsnet 590 The Fan. I'm JD Bunkus. I'm winged by Donovan Bennett. Follow us on Twitter at JD Bunkus and at Donovan Bennett. Also, don't forget to subscribe on iTunes. Hit that 5-star. 7 days, 5 games, only one at home. There's been 2 back-to-backs, one against, the defending champs, the Cleveland Cavaliers, and then come home to the Golden State. Start a 5-game road trip that included a back-to-back in Sacramento, a place that, Toronto's notoriously struggled in. I think they've only got 3 wins there in their entire franchise history. And then follow that up with arguably the best team in the NBA right now in Los Angeles Clippers a night ago. I think that we, going into this, there's, when you're talking about what we can learn from a terrible trip, and I think that there's 2 ways you can go with it where, one, there's a lot of people that will say, well, it's too tough. This is such a tough stretch and so many games and so few nights that you can't read anything into this. Did you feel that way? Or are you kind of the opposite where, hey, this is the high-end competition. These are measuring stick games. This is kind of where you should be making your bones. This is where they should be proving that they've taken a step, and maybe they haven't done that.
I mean, I think, are the Raptors as good as they looked in the first 2 weeks of the season? No. Are they as bad as they've played over the last 5 or 6 days? No. I think they're somewhere in the middle, which probably lands them in the upper echelon of the Eastern Conference below Cleveland, but right in the conversation with Atlanta, Charlotte, and maybe eventually Boston if your boy Al Horford decides to play basketball again.
He is, and the stats support how amazingly good he is, actually. They're like +1,000 when he plays and -1,000 when he's off. But anyway.
I think Jay Crowder is a little bit more valuable to that team. But this is where they are. They're a very good offensive team, specifically when their second unit is rolling and Patterson's hitting shots and Ross is hitting shots, which, I've been a bit negative around him, but he's been a weird word for him, consistent, over the last little while. And they're not a good defensive team by any means. So this is kind of who they are. This is the team that we expected, this team that we got.
Yeah, I think that the whole, hey, we're learning that the Raptors aren't in that upper echelon. Like, we already knew that heading into these games. Mm-hmm. And we already knew that this team was tough and that they weren't going to stop being tough without Bismack Biyombo. Regardless of all the results, and I don't believe that there are any more moral victories with this team. They're kind of past that point. But 5 games in 7 days, that's absolutely brutal. You look at all the travel and the way that they've done that. They played Cleveland down to the wire. Golden State, the score probably wasn't reflective of how close that game was, but they still didn't quit in that game. They go into Denver, which is, the altitude, tough place to play, go in overtime, travel to the Kings. Like I said, place they struggle. Have a terrible couple of moments against them. And then, boom, right to the Clippers, where they played tough again all the way down the stretch. There was probably, I don't even know how many times in that Clippers game you could have said, hey, this game's about to run away from the Raptors and it's time for them to quit and throw in the bench and just let it ride. But they played that game out to the end. So it's a tough team. The defense, I think, is, like as you mentioned, probably the one thing that I'm taking away from this and I'm a little scared about, regardless of the competition. Like, there's some things on D that are more than just, well, maybe they can correct that. The defensive rating in this team right now, they're at the bottom 10 with Blazers, Kings, Nets, Knicks, Lakers, Suns, Sixers, and the Wizards. They're also in the same grouping for field goal percentage for opponents, and they're even behind the Rockets, where they were a team that we expected them to be one of the worst in the NBA, like one of the worst defensive teams in the NBA, maybe of all time, where they were just going to play this big pace game and let everybody score. The Raptors are worse than them right now in terms of what they're giving opponents. Fourth in blocks, fifth in defensive rebounds, and these are fifth worst. And they've conceded 8 straight games with 100 points. When you look at them, what do you think's, like, it's more than Biz, right?
Yeah. I mean, they weren't a great defensive team last year, and it's not like the Orlando Magic are defensive juggernauts because they have Bismack Biyombo. To me, the real interesting conversation is, okay, we get it. You're not a great defensive team. No one is overly surprised with that fact.
But they're supposed to have some guys. They're supposed to have, basically, Corey Joseph is supposed to be almost the opposite of DeMar DeRozan, where he's a guy that's going to come in for you in games and be a lockdown guy. And we'll touch on him a little bit more later, but he hasn't been great. They haven't been playing Norman Powell enough, in my opinion, who's a guy that can give you some great perimeter defense. DeRozan, who we were told was going to play better defense this year, has not. Jonas Valanciunas continues to not take that step. He's a guy that you can't trust late in games and you cannot play, or that you can't hide in pick and roll defense. Damari Carroll still doesn't look that healthy. And while he had a nice game against Sacramento offensively, he still got absolutely cooked by Rudy Gay on the other end. Bebe's been a nice help defender, but he's another guy that gets lost in the pick and roll. I don't really see where this team is going to all of a sudden get better, where they're going to all of a sudden even be a top. Couldn't they get top 12 defense this year? I don't think so.
No, but the other issue for me is, like, everyone's hating on Golden State's defense. Actually, when their starters are in, or
they'll be fine.
Their death unit, they've been pretty good defensively, and their numbers are always going to be skewed because of the pace they play at offensively. The Raptors don't have that excuse. They don't play at a great pace offensively, and everyone was worried about the rim protection. I think the rim protection has been fine. Bebe has been good. JV has taken a step in that regard. The issue has been if there is any sort of a switch on the perimeter with a big, unless your name's Pascal Siakam, you're in trouble. If it's Bebe, you're in trouble. If it's JV, you're in trouble. And Poeltl hasn't played enough to really gauge. But the real question is, okay, well, what's the remedy? Like, is there lineup combinations? Is there more minutes for X player here or there that can change this? And are you willing to play DeMar DeRozan less and play Norman Powell and Terrence Ross more? Are you willing to play Jonas Valanciunas less and play Bebe more? And DeMar DeRozan and JV are efficiently, you know, two of your top three most impactful offensive players. Are you willing to sacrifice some of that plus offense? Do you think you have a surplus there to get more minutes out of guys who are a little bit more defensively sound?
I think they just need to accept that they're going to be a bad defensive team and continue to play with pace. Because some of the stuff that we've seen earlier in the year when they've looked their most effective, it's when they're getting out in the break right away and they're turning into transition and they're not taking a long time to set up their offense. And that's why it's so important to have guys like Damari Carroll and Patrick Patterson hitting down shots, because if you're going to push this pace and you're going to have these rim attackers like DeRozan and Lowry, those guys need to be able to make open shots and not get you killed the other way back in transition. I just don't see a fix. The one guy that I'm a little curious about, I guess I would say, would be, I mean, obviously Norman Powell is always going to be out there. I think he should be playing more minutes. When they drafted Jakob Poeltl, the whole premise around him was, hey, maybe this guy can play the four beside JV. And everything we've seen from Poeltl so far is that he's way ahead of schedule when it comes to him as a defender. I'm not as crazy about Siakam as you are. I think he takes a lot of bad fouls. I don't think that he's strong enough to play against guys. I mean, it's there's going to be dudes in the NBA that you just are uncoverable, basically. Like, we saw Blake Griffin the other night.
Kevin Durant.
Yeah, Blake Griffin is a beast. Of course, Siakam isn't strong enough to defend him. I'm not saying Poeltl is, but I was kind of surprised that they wouldn't even give Poeltl a small look at the four when, again, when they drafted this guy, they were saying, we think he can fit. Why not give him a look and see what he looks like at the four position when you're playing against double bigs like the Clippers have? They have all this roster flexibility, so Casey's going to be able to try to pick and choose what the best thing is every night. But again, unless all of a sudden Damari Carroll turns a corner, unless Corey Joseph starts showing up as the same guy he was, do you really want Kyle Lowry burning himself out on the defensive end, chasing down loose balls and defending top players when he's already leading the NBA in minutes and you're asking so much for him on offense? Oof, just a tough sell. I think they still need a piece. They still need a front court piece, and it's not going to be Jared Solinger that fixes things on the defensive end. Before we move on to Like It, Love It, Hate It, I want to talk about the shot clock thing really quickly. I thought it was obviously absolute crap. I think the NBA's explanation of things, I got it right here in front of me. They gave what they call the NBA statement on the final seconds of the Raptors-Kings game. After a view at the league office, we have concluded at the end of the game, it was officially corrected by NBA rules. We reviewed all aspects of the final 27.4 seconds, and below is a summary of the evaluation. Basically, they said that Toronto inbounded the ball 2.4 seconds and that they concluded that 2.5 seconds had run off the clock. And according to rule 13.2E1, that if there was a proper determination of the time, the game clock, it expires. There's no replay. That's it. You just negate the basket. And they also reviewed the final Sacramento possession, which they claim that it was all officiated above board and that there should have been 2.4 seconds. This has been dissected from every angle at this point. But again, I cannot believe that 0.1 seconds in a league where you're telling me that every time a guy touches a ball, that it's officiated to the exact fraction of a second. And that when you're reviewing a play like this and you know that it's a scorekeeper's malfunction and not an error that you can put on a player and that he's playing the clock, that they could conclusively say that this happened. I just think it's absurd. The question is, do you think that they have any type of recourse when it comes to having their appeal upheld?
No. I mean, no. And even if the NBA said today, oh, we're wrong, what are they going to do? Fly them back to Sacramento to play 5 minutes of basketball? Like, it's...
Oh, I don't even think they would get I don't think there's any way they would get the 5 minutes. There's no way they get the overtime. People have asked me about that and saying, oh, well, would they say that Ross got the shot off and they would count the shot and play 5 minutes? I think they would get the only way they would do it is if they're getting the 2.4 back and they have to do the play. And they're not going back to Sacramento.
So they're going to fly them back to Sacramento for 2.4 seconds?
Yeah, exactly.
No. I the better way to solve it is Ross and DeMarcus Cousins play 2.4 seconds on NBA 2K to figure it out. Listen, by the letter of the law, by the rule, it was correct.
Yeah, there's no way they're going to back down.
But it's a stupid rule.
It's a terrible precedent for the league in terms of how they're going to handle these types of clock violations late in games. I don't want to see any game handled that way. I think that it'll probably be something that they look at in the offseason. I can't imagine that there's not some tweak to this rule, that this doesn't set something else, because who wants to lose that way? It's terrible. But only one appeal has ever been upheld, and that was a game between the Hawks and the Cavs. Shaq, when he was there, they handed him an extra foul. And they had to replay the final minute of the game, basically, because they fouled him out and they said it correctly or was incorrectly officiated. It was all on the Hawks. Cost them $50,000. I don't see anything coming Sacramento's way. The league wants to bury this and move forward. It's going to cost the Raptors, I think, $10,000 to file this motion. There's no way they're going to see anything from this. It sucks, though, because I really think that shot was off in time. I don't think that anything could convince me that 2.5 seconds is real and that the NBA didn't just completely botch this. It's terrible. It's one of the worst calls I've ever seen in any professional sport.
Well, it's a two-part issue. One, there are many blogs online who have replayed it and said, even with the deflection and the clock starting at the right time, he still got the shot off. So that's one.
And the clock did start, by the way, before he touches the ball. There's no question about that. I've done the freeze frame enough times where I have seen it that the clock starts running before he touches the ball. So yes, Maybe they didn't get it right to the exact point second when Boogie tips it, but there's no way that it was that egregious of a miss that they even should have reviewed it to that point. It just, it's hard to talk about even now.
Yeah, you just, and just logically, you can't put the genie back in the bottle. Like, you can't say, well, he wouldn't have got the shot off because he's, as you mentioned, playing off of the clock. So that's ridiculous. So you literally, if that's the case where you acknowledge that the clock operator really malfunctioned, not the physical clock, you need to play the play again. Three, listen, you're at home, Sacramento. So, like, if there's a mistake by your clock operators and you're at fault for it, that's your bad. Like, I think it's one thing if there was a mistake and, it, you know, the Raptors are at home and you could say, oh, well, like, you know, the clock operators are trying to rig it for the home team, then okay, fine. But this clearly was a human error mistake, and that was on the home team's bat. So I just don't understand how you penalize the Raptors for that. The whole thing was a debacle.
Not to mention how the way I look at it when it all wraps up is which team is more upset by the way that things go down. You think that if Sacramento, if they came back from that review table and said, listen, they got it off in time, it's inconclusive. We did start the clock maybe a fraction or two of a second late, but it's too close to call, and you're going to go to overtime. You didn't lose the game. You weren't down two. It ends up being in your... You still get 5 minutes to play in overtime at home. I can't imagine that they're protesting the same way that the Raptors are. Like, I don't think they're filing a formal protest. I don't think it's going to be that way. So just an egregious move on the NBA. I will say this. I don't believe that the whole conspiracy theory stuff is so annoying. And that was the other side tangent of this, is that having to see Raptor fans go off on the league is against us, and people just throwing out the word Vegas. It's like, what? You have no idea what you're talking about. One guy was tweeting at me about how the total in the game was 211 and how that might have the league wanted to wrap up the game because they didn't want to hit the total. I was like, that is the stupidest thing I've ever heard. Do you really think that there's that much money on an over bet that Vegas was concerned about this and what called it in and said to end it? The conspiracy stuff makes us all look bad. Just save it.
Yeah,
don't tweet that crap.
We get it with the Jays. We get it with the Raptors. The whole, you know, woe is Canada. It is getting a bit old at this point.
Yeah, it's pretty brutal. Let's move on. We got to get to our like it, love it, hate it from the week. Give me, I guess, first the thing that you like.
I like Pascal Siakam. I love his energy. I love his intensity. I love his you know, defensive rebounding, his ability to close possessions. And, you know, early, it seems like 1,000 years ago at this point.
Try not to die. You'll be okay.
But early in the week, you know, he actually played Kevin Durant better than any other Raptor, including my man crush, Norm Powell. And Durant hit a bunch of tough shots.
That's because Norm Powell gives up more than a foot to him. But
well,
yeah, okay.
He gives more than a foot to a lot of wing players in the NBA. But in a very Shane Battier-esque way, he was forcing Durant to take low percentage tough shots. And if he made them, he'll say, okay, you know what, I'll shake your hand. So I like what I'm seeing from Pascal on both ends.
What did Durant finish with in that game? Didn't he have like 30 plus?
Yeah, he did. But... He had to work for them.
Okay, nice. That's good. They lost. He had to work for them. I don't know. Siakam's getting a little too much love for me. I think he takes a lot of bad fouls.
Steph Curry didn't have to work for his points. He was shooting warm-up threes.
I look at this and I'm like, okay, I can't wait for Patterson to check in every single game. I'm just dying for it. He's got a couple. I like that Siakam actually has shown a little bit of more touch than I expected him to have early in the league. Like, I find myself doing the no whenever he steps in for that little hook shot or he's doing that baseline jumper. But he's knocking him down at a pretty decent clip. But, yeah, the fouls are a pretty big issue. They were really bad in the Clippers game. I think three of his last five games he's had four more fouls. So he's got to curve down on those. That's the thing that he'll learn as a rookie. Obviously, he's got the upside. I haven't been nuts about him. My like it is seeing signs of life from Damari Carroll on offense. That game... The other night, he against the Kings, I think that was probably, I mean, might even be it's easily his best game of the season so far. Again, we mentioned that he got cooked on offense, but in terms of an offensive performance, I think that's the Damari Carroll that you signed up for. He's knocking down his three, stepping into him, coming down in transition, knocking him down, making that really beautiful night, that cut where DeMar DeRozan found him right under the basket. That's one of the things I loved about signing DeMar Carroll in the first place is that he's a really smart off-the-ball player, knows where he needs to be on the floor. I mean, he has missed a ton of time, and I think for a rhythm shooter like him, it's going to be important to see what he's going to be able to do over the next couple of weeks. I think that'll be a true indicator of what we're going to see down the stretch. But the defensive game seems to be, I mean, I don't think he's ever going to be an elite defender again. I think that we can almost wrap that up. I don't see it happening. Love it. I don't have it. I don't have one thing for this team other than Kyle Lowry's play. But again, I don't love it that much because he's leading the league in minutes again, and they are burning him out. He's 39 minutes a game for Kyle Lowry so far this season. We've seen this before. This is what happens. Kyle Lowry's 30 years old. It's almost like they're trying to get, like, they're not going to re-sign him. I'm not saying this is actually true.
It sounds like your hate.
No, but they're trying. It's almost like they're trying to burn him out so that when they let him walk, they can justify it because he's going to have some type of an injury. Like, you shouldn't be playing this guy this much. You can't do it. His body, we've seen this year after year after year, that it doesn't hold up. You've got these meaningless games in November, and you're killing your star player, the engine of your team, with more minutes than anybody else in the league. Like, why? I don't get why he's playing. Oh, I do know why he's playing so much, and I'll get to that with my hate it. But Casey's got to find some ways to alleviate some of these minutes because it's way too much right now. DeRozan, at least, is a younger guy. He's also top four in minutes. You're always going to lean heavily on those two. Casey's been a guy that staggers those dudes. I love what I've seen from Lowry, but I hate seeing him play 39 a night. It's too much. 41 on a back-to-back. Ugh.
My love is Bebe. Love is rim protection. Love is energy. He's actually, you know, after being buried, you know, coming out of the preseason with his injury and Poeltl stealing some of his minutes, he's actually reclaimed that spot as the second center coming off the bench and missed the game on the road trip, but it's because he introduced a baby girl into the world. He's now a father, which is crazy because I feel like Bebe himself is still a kid, and now he's a father.
Yeah, I'm stealing this from the Sportsnet Connected desk, but Bebe had a baby. I love that. That's really funny. Again, I don't really understand your deep love. I mean, he's 10 minutes against Sacramento, 12 against the Warriors, missed the Nuggets game. He's finished with a positive 22 in those games, but he hasn't. I don't think he's been playing as much, and I actually like that a little bit more because I want to see more JV. I think, again, it's important, like you saw in that Sacramento game, to how good he can be if you establish him early and you trust him early. That being said, you know, it's not a coincidence that Valanciunas' best offensive game, or at least one of his best performances of the year, comes against the Kings team that couldn't really expose him in the pick and roll, and DeMarcus Cousins got into big-time foul trouble early in the game and kind of just let him take over. Hate it. I've been hating Corey Joseph's play this season. I know he's your guy. I've been a big Corey Joseph guy in the past as well. He was excellent last year. But the Raptors need him to be better, and he's been awful. The jump shot's not falling. The defense has been bad. He's pressing on offense. He had actually a couple of moments at least against the Clippers last night that I liked in the fourth quarter. But his turnover and assist ratio are almost identical. And from 16 feet or further, he's shooting 27%. He's been basically unplayable with DeMar DeRozan in games, which is putting a ton of pressure on Kyle Lowry, like I mentioned, forcing him to play a ton of minutes. He's averaging as many minutes a game right now as he did when he was in the Spurs his final year, where, you know, he's a third bench point guard, which is just, you're not getting enough from Corey Joseph right now.
Would you like to see some Freddie V?
No, I don't think it's that point. I think I would actually just rather see more Norman Powell. Haven't you liked The couple things I've liked from Norm this year that he's developed, and I do think Norm love gets a little crazy sometimes from guys like you, but the two things that I've liked from Norm this year is that he does look like he's improved as a ball handler, which I think that he can be a guy that gets into defenses. He's got to be a bit better with his passing. Again, you saw in the Clippers game, he gets into the second level of the defense, and instead of just lobbing it up to the big, he's shoveling it into people's feet, bounce passes. Got to learn to get better there. But the ball handling, I think, is good enough where he can handle some of those minutes and take some of them away from Corey Joseph while he's struggling, or at least, again, let Kyle Lowry play off the ball as well. And then the other thing is the three-point shooting from the corners. If he continues to shoot it at that clip, I don't see any way that you can keep him off the court because he's just giving you too much. But it's not a give Van Vliet minutes thing. It's just that Corey Joseph needs to be better. Like, he's better than this. There's no way that he's taken this big of a slip as a defensive player, and I think a lot of it is that he's pressing so much on offense that he's kind of forgetting the basis of the player that he is, which is a guy that needs to be a lockdown dude on the perimeter. And we mentioned one of the Raptors' biggest issues right now is dribble penetration. And the reason they're so low in defensive rebounding is because their bigs are constantly coming over to help. And then even when these guys are missing floaters or missing these pull-ups, there's nobody down in the paint to grab boards. Like, that's just the way it is right now. They're terrible defensively. And the only way one of the only ways they're going to get better is if the guy they signed, they gave money to be your lockdown guy on the perimeter, starts playing that way. And the offense, he's always been a good guy at letting the game come to him. And I think we say this about DeMar DeRozan too, that when he's pressing and when he's over dribbling and he's forcing it a little too much, that's when you start to see the ugliness. And for Corey Joseph, that's been the case. I look at him on offense, and it's like he's not looking to pass first, which he's always been a pass first guard. He's trying to shoot himself out of this slump by taking really tough shots at the basket or those fadeaway pull-ups when guys go underneath on screens, which they're constantly going to do to him because, like I said, 27% from 16 feet or farther. Kojo's got to figure it out because they don't have another option. But, okay, let's say this. Remember the Nerlens Noel trade rumor? And remember how we shot it down because we said Corey Joseph was too valuable? So you're getting DeLon Wright back at some point. He is a guy that you invested a first-round pick in. You have seen more from Norman Powell. If the Sixers came calling today and they offered you the same deal, has it changed your mind at all?
No, because I don't think Nerlens Noel is that good.
No, Nerlens Noel fixing a lot of things on that defensive side of the ball. Just saying. Quick break. Speaking of point guards, going to catch up with Jose Calderon. I'm not. You went there. I can't afford to take fancy trips to L.A. That's just a you thing. You got nice clothes, fancy. You're just a fancy guy. Just live a very fancy life. This is Free Association on Sportsnet.ca.
Los Angeles.
First and foremost, what has your transition been like on this new team?
It's been great so far. Different role, first time in a while, just not being a starter. But after that, just adjusting to everything. The team has been great so far. Young guys, it's a really good mix with the bets, and so far, no complaints at all.
What is the biggest adjustment for you at this part of your career?
I think right now I got to think more about family and stuff than anything else. It's about just, I know what I have to do. I know what the coaches wanted from me. I'm just here, helping the guys. Like I'm, helping the way they need me. And I think it's more outside from basketball now than the basketball part.
12 years in the league, specifically at the point guard position, what have you seen change with the way the game is played?
I think there is now more all-around point guards, if I can call that, maybe even more aggressive, more a scorer than maybe a few years ago. I think right now almost in every team there is a guy scoring, 20-plus points per game. I don't know if that was the way it was a few years ago.
Have you had to adjust your game because, assist to turnover is something we always talk about with point guards. Now it's not really mentioned as much.
Because, like I said, because it's a different kind of point guards. You need those guys to really score the ball. Now you have more role players on the wings or on the big guys than before. Than before was, it was a little bit different. I think that's the change. When you got, the ball on your hands all that time and you're shooting 20-plus shots per game, you cannot ask for a seat to turnover right here, too, because, it's going to be more risk in everything.
When you started in the league, D'Angelo wasn't even in high school. What have you talked to him about, as he starts to mature as a point guard in the NBA?
Well, just, I think the more difficult part in the NBA is just to be consistent. I think guys sometimes they're too worried, they're too high or too low just because a good, a great, or a bad game. I think it's about just being always in the middle. Just try to keep going, keep working. Doesn't matter if you win or lose a game the night before. Doesn't matter if you score 20 or none. The night before, it's about just putting the work in, just keep working, and usually when you do that, good things happen.
You're still beloved in Toronto as one of the all-time favorite Raptors. When you see the way the fan base is now and the team making the playoffs, what do you think?
Oh, it is great, and I love it, and Even the years we weren't great, the fans were great from day one. I got there, so it's always gonna be something special for me. I still own a happy place there, and it's the one I'm not getting rid of for sure. I just love it, and it's nice to see all these young guys I was with before and growing and being great, and I love it.
Why do you still have a place there? Like, why does it have a place in your heart?
Well, it was 8 years, you know, so it was almost a third, you know, third of my life. So, you know, it's pretty big.
When you see the team making Eastern Conference Finals for the first time, and you were there and in the playoffs, but not that level of success, did you envision how, you know, the sport would take off in Canada the way it has?
I think everything is about time in these leagues. It's about being patient, getting the right pieces, you know, and I think, you know, with patience you do it. I think it's been a lot of work to get to where the Raptors are right now, or not only the Raptors, the other sport teams as well. You're going to go up and down, you know, it happens in every city, but it's true, like Toronto, you know, it's a big city, the fan base is great, and it was about time.
Kyle Lowry has obviously had great success there. When he got there, he was backing you up. To see where his game is now, are you surprised at all?
Not really. You know, when a guy put the work in and he sacrificed a lot, he did a lot to get better. He's a great guy. He's a winner. He want to win every game. There is no friendly games for him, and that's a big thing, you know. So I'm not surprised at all. The opposite, that, you know, he'll keep getting better.
And people obviously were very happy when DeMar decided to stay in Toronto and re-sign. You saw him grow up in Toronto. Now he's leading the league in scoring. Did you think he was going to get to this place?
Well, I think you see the problem sometimes with people from the outside. You don't see what everybody does in the daily basis. And I think DeMar, I think it'll be one of the guys I saw spend the most hours in that gym. And that's paid off. You know, I don't know if he was going to be the best scorer in the league, but all-star, gold medalist, you know, for sure. He's a great kid. Like I said, same thing I said about Kyle. You know, when you're willing to work, good things happen.
Now you're on a team with this young Lakers team who's building up to get to that point. Has there been one of these young baby Lakers that you've really impressed with their work ethic?
I think everybody's been doing really well. I think the coaches are, you know, getting everybody. You know, Brandon Ingram is a new guy. He's just right here with me, and he was number two, and he's putting the time. And D'Lo is getting better, and Julius has been playing great this season. You know, so, you know, I like it. I like the way we're working. I like the way we're doing, and hopefully we can keep it going.
Not often do you have a coach who you played against in the league. What's the experience been like with Luke as he finds his way as a head coach?
I think he's been great so far. I think he's really, he knows what he wants. I think he really, maybe for some of these guys it's easier to relate about what he says because he just played and they saw him play. So I think that's a good thing, and it's good for me. It's okay.
You've seen a former player and Luke become a coach right away and have some success. You saw Derek Fisher, a former player, be a coach and struggled a bit. You were a coach on the floor. Does that part of the game intrigue you at all whenever you decide you're done?
No, I don't think so. But just because, like I said before, I put always family first, and that's right away. It's not going to be something I'm looking for because I just need my time with the family. I think we spend so much time on the road just going and putting so much time in the gym as well. When you're home, then, you know, I think it's time for me to spend some more time with them.
You are 35 now, but still in good shape. How much time do you think you have playing the game?
I think there is two possibilities here. There is one, nobody wants you anymore, so that's when they tell you, okay, you're done. And the other one is the body, keep going, you, for sure I'll keep playing. But I would like to play at least 2 or 3, 4, you know, I don't know. 2 or 3, I think I can do that.
And you're in Toronto, obviously, New York, L.A. You seem to pick the markets with great restaurants. Where's the best food that you had?
And actually, I didn't pick them. That's the problem. You know, the ones, like, I've been in New York by trade, I'm here by trade. So I didn't, but it's been great. Just different. I think right now in U.S., there is good restaurants everywhere, and I always try to find, you know, something out there. But it's, you know, I don't know what's better. I love Toronto restaurants. You know, there is a lot of great restaurant there for sure.
Is there one spot that was your go-to when you're in Toronto?
When I was in Toronto, it depends what I was looking for because I have Josso's, up there. If I want a sushi, you know, it's so many. Jacob and Company for a steakhouse or whatever. There is always a Buca for Italian. I like good places. You know, there is always good places.
the Spanish national team has been the model for a lot of the international teams because of the long success you guys had. Canada basketball is now trying to do the same thing. What's the key to success you guys had over your great run?
I think it's about how you treat the national team, about you cannot be thinking, oh, I'm losing my summer. If you think about that, you're going to be out in 2 years. It's about, you know, having good chemistry, enjoy the summer with your friends. I think it's important, too, for the, in this case, Canada front office or whatever, to make sure, like, okay, we're working, but I'm not saying in vacation, but we are having a good time at the same time. So you don't get your head, like, just too much basketball. It got to be, you know, families, you know, for us, it was great. Like, families were allowed to visit us, you know, every time. If we were for dinner, everybody goes for dinner, like, so it was kind of like yes, we with the national team, yes, we're preparing something, but we cannot be thinking about basketball 12 months a year. So I think if you can do that, guys actually like to be with each other. Actually, you know, we enjoy each other in summers and we have fun.
Why is it culturally different that way in basketball? You see in soccer, national anthem, players are crying, hockey guys are literally fighting to get on the national team. Basketball, it seems culturally, it's different. It's more of a chore. Why is that?
It shouldn't be like that. I don't feel that way. I think, like I said, it's about, you know, just be ready for it. And I think it depends what your team is doing. I think it depends what country you're from. Like, you know, people feel different about their country. So it's always special for some guys. You know, you always think about, hey, I want to be representing my country. For other guys, maybe it's not that important. So that's why it's always a fine line there to figure out what you want it. Like, you know, there is guys who like it. There is, like, maybe they don't.
Everyone knows about the golden generation, but still Spanish players having an impact in the game. You see, obviously, Rubio and the way he's playing, and the Gasol brothers still playing well. For you, what does it feel like when you look at the box score and you see your countrymates doing well?
You know, I love it, you know. Even, like, for me, last in Rio was my last, it's going to be my last, it was my last run with the national team, but, you know, I just won. It's not about my teammates. I mean, like, sometimes it's about, like you say, it's about my country. Like, I want my country to do well. I don't want them to lose games. And in the NBA, it's different. You know, even if I'm with the Lakers, Knicks, Toronto, whatever, you always take a look at your guys and say, okay, they're doing well. Like, you know, those are my teammates.
Lots of expectations on this Lakers team because you guys have had such an unexpected start. What is a positive season for you? Is it growth? Is it playoffs? What is it?
I think right now it's just to keep working in what we're doing, just game by game. Just, you know, we'll see what the league and the season give us after, you know, a few more games. But as right now, you cannot think too ahead and thinking playoff or thinking, no, we're working on, you know, getting these guys better, be a better teammates, be a better team, play better. If you win games doing that, that's great. But I think it's too early to say if we have to change, you know, what we were thinking at the beginning.
And lastly, when your career is done, not yet, but when it is, what do you want all those fans in Toronto and Canada across the country to remember about Jose Calderon?
I think I saw that, like, you know, I always put the team first. I think that's really important. I think I'm a good person. I think that's even more important. That's why my parents kind of like raised me. And I think that's all. When you got that respect, you know, the rest, basketball is secondary.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you to Jose Calderon, Lakers PR, for having me out in El Segundo on a game day to talk with one of the better point guards that this franchise has ever seen, for sure. Past first point guards and a really nice guy.
Jose There's no Calderon. Mike James. But
who?
I do love that when he's, what do you want to be remembered for? I was a really nice guy. That's such a Spanish guy thing to say. Not all the assists that he had here, not all the playmaking, the three-point shooting, the free throw streak, nothing, not the playoffs, the, you know, winning the Atlantic. It just, that I was a super nice guy, Jose. So I remember I hated at the end of Jose Calderon's tenure because he went from being a fan favorite to a fan target. You remember that time? Like, there was a stretch where people hated seeing Jose Calderon come in games because his defense was so bad. And he was just getting heckled mercilessly, basically, at every single Raptors home game that I went to. That was a little painful. I was always a Jose guy.
Yeah, I mean, people were somewhat divisive over Jose. And basically, it was, do you care about assist-to-turnover ratio or do you not? And if you did, you liked him. And if you didn't, well, you weren't a fan. I always liked Jose. I always thought he brought, you know, a good spirit when he was on the court. And he made the right play offensively, which I think is underrated in team basketball. So
I also like what he said about the wing player thing.
Yeah. Thank you for reminding me. Because it is interesting how the game has changed when you're in the game so long. It will change. But there has been, you know, this market, you know, efficiency of teams saying, well, you know what, if there's all these elite scorers, if we get big wing defenders who can hold their own offensively by just shooting threes and giving us spacing, we can play, you know, these 3-and-D guys. And thus, because your wings aren't necessarily 15 to 20 point scorers a night on all teams, you need more points out of your point guard. And thus you get these super guards, as Steve Nash calls them, the Westbrooks, the Hardens, that aren't the traditional pass first point guards that we remember, but, you know, these kind of beasts at the point guard position. And Jose doesn't necessarily fit in that. So he's kind of been, you know, pushed to the side as the game is changed.
And he's old. He's so old.
That too. But even Jose in his prime, I feel like, would not be as appreciated now as he was, you know, when he first became a Raptor.
Yeah, he's more of a spot-up shooter guy, not a create off the dribble on his own guy.
The best point guard in the league, arguably Steph Curry, more than half of the time he's playing off of the ball.
And we have that here too in Toronto, where it's like we have Kyle now playing his off the ball minutes and easily one of our most important scorers and our easily our most important offensive player, even more so than DeMar DeRozan. Speaking of wing guys that try to do it on both ends, we did talk a little bit while you were gone. You did hit me with one. Andrew Wiggins dropped his 47-point night, and you hit me with something to do with him not playing for Team Canada. I saw red immediately as you wrote it, and so I just kind of blacked out for a minute, and I would like you to clarify this comment.
Well, Andrew Wiggins is having a great start to you. Remember when it was a conversation of, you know, who should be the first pick, Jabari Parker or Andrew Wiggins?
Yeah, guess what, though? Joel Embiid is actually legitimate. Like, he was my pick that year, and he's still in the conversation for that top pick.
Let's see if he
and Parker's been playing good this year.
Let's see if he makes it to his sixth or seventh year in the league. But Wiggins has, you know, taken such a huge leap, even more so arguably this year than Towns. And, you know, all I said this summer was, let's not criticize Andrew for taking some personal time to work on his game, to get some rest, because if it puts him in a better position in his career, then that's good for him, that's good for the Timberwolves, that's good for Canada basketball in general. And it's clearly early. We're 14 games into the year. But, you know, with 1/6 of the season played, Andrew Wiggins is in a much better place already under Tom Thibodeau than he was previously.
It was a 6-day tournament. 6 days, Andrew. And if you're there, they go through and you play in the Olympics, which, how would that have hurt your summer? How would that have hurt your game? How would that have hurt your development? How would that have cut down on time you would have been able to shoot in the gym? The Andrew Wiggins revolution, or the story that, you know, he's taken this massive leap, I think is a little over-exaggerated. Let's just put it that way. His three-point shooting, no doubt about it, has been incredible this year. He's like hovering around like 45% from deep, which is a pretty big uptick from a guy that's been a 30% shooter the first couple of years in his league. His offensive efficiency has been better. That's the real story here, is that a guy with a great handle and who can get to the basket and has a ton of moves and a ton of athleticism, if he adds a three-point shot, he's going to be a beast offensively. His defense is still leaving much to be desired for a guy that we thought was going to come into the league and be a lockdown guy. He does have the more rebounds. He's making more plays. Yes, he's been good. Like, I'm not trying to crap all over the guy. I'm just saying that in terms of why he's seeing this step, to say that it's because he didn't represent his country this year and that he just focused in the gym, I don't buy it. I don't buy it That's like saying, oh, if he turned down a BioSteel endorsement then to spend a few more minutes in the gym, that it would be the same thing. I get that it's the travel and all this crap, but I don't buy it. I think Andrew Wiggins is just, like, he's a first overall pick in the NBA draft. Like, it's his third year in the league. He should be getting better every year. It's not like he should be stagnating. We should just be, this is a thing that we should be anticipating, not just saying, oh, wow, it's because of this. It's because he's a really talented guy who has the, with an unbelievable athletic arsenal that, with all the resources around him, should be able to shoot the ball this way.
Right, but a lot of early round picks don't get better, and a lot of early picks don't ever get to the point in the career that he's already at. Andrew Wiggins is the CEO of Andrew Wiggins Incorporated, and his sole
responsibility. I'm not saying he can't make his own choices. I'm just saying he made the wrong one here.
His sole responsibility is to do what is best for Andrew Wiggins first and foremost. And if he believes, listen, I'm not saying if I was Andrew Wiggins, I wouldn't have thrown on the red and white. I'm saying if he believed that that's what he needed to do for himself, then I respect his decision. That's all I'm saying.
I will never respect it. And I, you know what? It drives me nuts because I actually am an Andrew Wiggins fan. I just can't help it. I am. I'm Canadian. I cheer for the Canadian guys. I waited for him for a really long time. I like the Timberwolves in general, although they've been pretty disappointing this year. If you look at, by the way, our preseason Western Conference picks, I was pretty dead on with most of my stuff, except for the Timberwolves. They're the ones that are making me look terrible. And the Lakers and the Timberwolves are basically flipped in terms of what I thought they were going to be. But man, sometimes you make me want to cheer against them. Like, this is,
I don't make you do anything.
When he's having good games and you're saying that it's good because, you know, Andrew Wiggins Incorporated or whatever the hell you're talking about over there made the right decision to stay home or blah, blah, blah. I see red and I just get mad. I get really, really mad. Play for your damn country. And Calderon said the same thing. Like, you asked him about it. Just Jose, you know, and he's like, oh, it's not the same for all guys. Jose, it sounds so good. It's not the same for all people from all different countries. And yes, it continues to be established that it's not the same for Canada. And it's because star players like Andrew Wiggins historically don't show up to everything, which is annoying.
He for one summer did not show up.
And that was the one summer that counted.
That's not historically. He has a great track record of representing his country.
Yeah, it's fine. You're fine, Andrew. Okay. Got to wrap this up. Thanks for spending the time with us. We've probably taken a little bit too long today. And please leave reviews. Go leave a review. Leave a comment. Leave the 5 stars. Jazz, who's helping us out today producing this, guaranteed has not reviewed the podcast. What the hell, Jazz? Jerk. Emil was away today. He's covering TFC. Apparently, they're still playing. That's the word on the street. It's TFC. Go Reds. Is that what you say?
Versus the Impact.
All right. That's enough. That's enough TFC talk ever on this podcast.
The first leg. Again, in the Big O. On the turf.
Follow us on Twitter.
How will the ball play?
No. This is disgusting. But Andrew Wiggins shouldn't play for Canada, and soccer is good. That's at Donovan Bennett.
Soccer's, you can follow
him on Twitter. List Free Association on sportsnet.ca.